Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin, broadcasting live from New Orleans. Coming up next on News One Now, the officer who shot and killed Philando Castile has been charged with second-degree manslaughter. His girlfriend, Diamond Phillips, who live-streamed the last moments of his life, will join us live right here on News One Now to share her thoughts on this development, as well as Judge Glenda Hatchett, who represents the Castile family in their civil lawsuit. Also, backlash continues against Donald Trump picking Steve Bannon, who critics say is a white nationalist and a white supremacist, as his chief strategist. Democrats are demanding that he be removed from that particular position before Trump even goes into the White House. We will talk with Congresswoman Alma Adams of North Carolina. Also, we continue our Wisdom of the Elders series, laying the path forward for Black America. Joining us today, Ambassador Andrew Young. He will share his thoughts and perspective as well. Plus, the families of nonviolent drug offenders who are languishing in prison, they want President Barack Obama to take action immediately before he leaves office. They're fearful that President Donald Trump will not be as concerned about people who have been sentenced to years in prison for drugs. And also, you might be going to the movies this weekend. A lot of movies for African Americans are going to be broadcast almost Christmas, as well as, of course, Madea's Hollywood film as well. Folks, we have all the latest on the entertainment options for you this weekend. It's time to bring the funk from the Crescent City. News One Now on TV One.
He just shot his arm off. We got pulled over on Larpiner.
I told him not to reach for it. I told him to get his hand off
me. You told him to get his ID, sir, and his driver's license. Oh, my God, please don't tell me he's dead.
It is my conclusion that the use of deadly force by Officer Yanez was not justified, and that sufficient facts exist to prove this to be true.
It's the beginning to a different chapter, and we all hope and pray that the right thing is done in this issue.
Officer Geronimo Yanez, folks, will appear in court tomorrow after he was charged yesterday with second-degree manslaughter and the death of Philando Castile, of course, a 32-year-old cafeteria worker who was shot and killed on July 6th. So many of us saw that live because his girlfriend, Diamond Phillips, actually live-streamed his final moments. It was stunning for us to actually see that particular video, to hear her, to hear him gasping for air. Prosecutors determined that if he was not justified in shooting Philando Castile, which is why he was actually charged with his second-degree manslaughter. Of course, this set off a round of protests. People all across the country were stunned as a result of these developments, especially having seen this live on Facebook. Joining me now via FaceTime from Minneapolis is Diamond Phillips. Of course, Diamond Reynolds. She, of course, shot that particular video that so many of us have now seen. Also joining us on the phone is her attorney, Larry Rogers from Chicago. Diamond, first and foremost, again, our condolences on the loss of Philando. Your immediate thoughts on the decision to charge this officer, the first time an officer in Minnesota has been charged for a fatal shooting in more than 16 years.
I was relieved that the prosecutor was even able to bring charges up against Officer Yanez. So I was very relieved that, you know, we were able to bring charges, but they weren't exactly what I wanted. So with me being relieved that charges had been filed, I'm still kind of sad and at disbelief that the highest charge was not brought against him.
And when you say the highest charge, you were hopeful that they were going to charge Officer Yanez with murder?
murder to the highest extent of the law.
I want to bring in your attorney, Larry Rogers Jr. from Chicago. Larry, we've seen so many of these cases before, and the reality is it's very difficult for prosecutors to try officers on murder charges. We know the officer who shot and killed Laquan McDonald has been charged with murder, but typically in these cases, prosecutors are leery of that because, again, they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, and juries often give significant amount of leeway to police officers.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Roland. And you have to understand, as Diamond was sitting there in that car next to Philando, what she witnessed is a murder. So it was our hope that he would be charged with exactly what she witnessed, because there was absolutely no provocation. There was no basis for him to fire at all, Philando. But as you said, it's hard for prosecutors to prove murder. So I have to give Prosecutor Choi, and we have to give Prosecutor Choi, a great deal of credit. This is the first time in the history of Minnesota they've ever charged an officer. And he looked at the evidence. He detailed the evidence from the dash cam, both audio and video, and he brought charges he thought he could prove.
Diamond, I want to go back to you, and that is, what has life been like for you as well as your child since July? You've been in the national spotlight, having to do multiple interviews. This is something that folks like you, as well as his mother and others, don't ask for.
I mean, this is never something that I wanted. This is never something that I conflicted upon myself. My life has been everything but normal. For me being able, you know, not to find a job in my local community, to being picked on and bullied and tormented by people in my community for blaming me for this happening. So even though people look at me as a strong woman and a courageous one, there are still people out there that blame me. So it's very hard being me every day in my skin in this world when I'm constantly being attacked by my own people.
All right, then. Diamond Reynolds, we certainly appreciate you joining us this morning on TV One's News 1-9. Larry Rogers, we appreciate it as well.
Thank you very much for having us.
Folks, in just a moment, we're going to talk with Judge Glenda Hatchett, who represents the Castile family. Right now, though, I want to go to my panel there in Washington, D.C. Joining us today on the show is Steve Munastiri, former chair of the chairman of the Texas Republican Party, Barbara Arnwine, founding president of Transformative Justice Coalition, and also Andrew Lee, Republican strategist. Barbara, I'll start with you. You heard Larry Rogers say that in Minnesota history, no cop has ever been charged in one of these fatal shootings. And again, folks are pleased with this, but that's not full justice. We've seen this in other cases where officers have been charged. But again, when they go to trial, either there'll be a mistrial or they're found not guilty.
Yes, and it's so important for all of us to be clear that bringing up charges is just the first step, that the most important part of the entire criminal justice process here, when you're dealing with an officer, is to make sure that there's a conviction. And that has to lie in the hands of those who will be making the decisions. I think, listen, I want Diamond Reynolds to know that she is an international hero. Regardless of what she's hearing on the ground, we are sending her major love for her amazing composure, her ability to communicate so well during that most stressful situation. We will never forget her, and I don't want her to ever feel isolated. Reach out to me, my sister, because we care for you.
Steve and Andrew, look, bottom line is this here. For a lot of people, charging this officer is critically important because so many people in the public believe that officers are essentially getting away with murder. That, again, we grant them so much space, if you will. Some officers simply have to say, hey, my life is in danger. And we're seeing that in recent shootings as well. And so, your thoughts?
Well, I think it's very important that citizens have faith in their institutions. And one of the things that restores faith in the institutions if you feel that there is a fair administration of justice. So the prosecutor made the call that the officer should be charged. And hopefully, if nothing else out of this tragedy, there will be a sense that at least there will be some fairness and hopefully, ultimately, some justice.
Yeah, I feel the same way, Roland. I think that in this case, we saw Prosecutor Choi really take a brave first step. And in Minneapolis, there have been over 100 cases where someone has actually, a cop has not been prosecuted. So this is a necessary step to bring the community together. This is a necessary step. How many of us would have the same courage to be able to actually film this and while it was happening? And then to be able to step forward. So we should be able to support the Castile family and really fight to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Now the next step, Barbara, obviously, is jury selection. And that is, he's now been charged. And so that's also going to be critical. We saw what happened there in the Sam DeBose case. Of course, the officer in Cincinnati the officer who shot and killed Sam DeBose, that was declared a mistrial there as well. And so, again, jury selection now matters.
Yes, and it really is important. Once again, this reminds people about why you need to vote, because the juries are taken from the voter rolls in most jurisdictions. And so it's a reminder of the importance of registering to vote and being a voter in our country. But I just want to say also that, you know, the Minneapolis Police Department is a department that's been on my radar screen for decades because of people's concerns about the way in which it operates. And it's been under investigation and a lot of concerns about it. So I just want to know people to note that this is not an isolated incident, even though this happened in the St. Paul region. It's still very much the same kind of policing problem. And I want, you know, everyone to understand that this fight for justice that we're undertaking in the Black Lives Matters movement is to make sure that you don't have runaway, unaccountable police departments, and when these incidents of slayings happen, that people are brought fully to justice. And it requires that people on the jury are conscientious, that they don't engage in jury nullification, which is, you know, just ignoring all the facts and making their own decisions based on the fact that they feel that police officers, quote, keep them safe. It's very important for us to look at the actual facts of the case, what happened here. And I am really respectful of Prosecutor Choi bringing these charges, because look at how long it took him. He really went into the record. He got the testimony of the other officer. He looked at so many facts. So I think this is a case that's winnable.
All right, want to go to now to the phone lines. Judge Glenda Hatchett. She represents the Castile family. Judge Hatchett, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. First and foremost, your thoughts with regards to prosecutor there charging Officer Yanez in the shooting death of Philando Castile.
I agree. I've been listening this morning, and I agree. I think that the prosecutor, John Choi, along with the special prosecutor, Don Lewis, and the entire team took their time. Well, from the very beginning, I had said to them that I would rather it be thorough than fast. And so the Castile family agrees and supports this, as do I. This is the first important step, but I just want to stress that never, ever, ever in the history of Minnesota has a police officer been ever charged. I'm not talking about found guilty. I'm talking about even charged with the fatal shooting of a citizen. And so this is historic. It's monumental. And also we're seeing amazing collaboration between John Choi's office and his staff and the federal government. The U.S. Department of Justice has weighed in on this, and I'm very pleased to have their resources on this case as well.
Well, let me ask you the question. So did the prosecutor give the family a heads up, call them ahead of time, alerting them to his decision to charge Officer Yanez?
Yes, very much to his credit. He did invite me and my team, and of course, very importantly,
the mother, Ms. Castile, and Alizé, his sister, in for a very late night meeting Tuesday night before he made the decision, before he made the public announcement on Wednesday morning, which I very much appreciated because this was not the kind of situation that we wanted to, the family to hear on the news. So yes, he did brief. He had his entire staff there. The U.S. attorney from Minnesota was there, FBI director. Very pleased that he had the sensitivity to do that before it was made public.
All right, Judge Hatch, we certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Absolutely, well, and thank you for keeping an eye on this important story.
All right, thanks a bunch. Folks, coming up next on News One Now, President Barack Obama is in Greece, still trying to calm the concerns of world leaders about an impending Donald Trump presidency. Also, here back in the States, Democrats continue to put pressure on Trump in order for him to remove Steve Bannon as his chosen chief strategist, saying he is a white supremacist and a white nationalist. We'll be joined by Congresswoman Alma Adams of North Carolina. Also later in the show, we'll also talk to Ambassador Andrew Young, Wisdom of the Elders. Our series continues talking about the path forward for Black America in a Trump presidency. And later in the show, we'll also hear from several family members about the issue of clemency for the loved ones who have been who are in prison on drug charges. Folks, it is 16 after the hour. News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Welcome back to News One Now, broadcasting live from New Orleans, where last night I was speaking to students at Dillard University. Certainly glad to be on their campus and their president, Dr. Walter Kimbrough, my fraternity brother. Had a good time last night as well. Folks, President Barack Obama, he is in Greece on his last foreign trip as president of the United States. Of course, that is the birthplace of democracy. And of course, it's very interesting as he is there trying to soothe the feelings of world leaders when it comes to a Donald Trump presidency. Yesterday, he spoke about the issue of democracy and American elections.
You may have noticed the next American president and I could not be more different. That's why, as hard as it can be sometimes, it's important for young people in particular who are just now becoming involved in the lives of their countries to understand that progress follows a winding path, sometimes forward, sometimes back.
And folks, of course, here in the United States, Democrats continue to press the issue, saying they're going to challenge Donald Trump at every turn. Yesterday, Senate incoming Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York made that point perfectly clear. Also, he made it clear that Donald Trump should remove Steve Bannon, his chosen chief strategist, from the White House, calling him a white nationalist and a white supremacist.
The things he said are reprehensible and... we're going to keep a really careful eye on the president and on him. If they do anything from this day forward, they've done so much awful from this day back, and we're going to go after them in terms of bigotry.
So the Poverty Law Center, they have actually started a petition calling for the removal of Steve Bannon. What the petition is called, Steve Bannon has no business in the White House. On Twitter, also, white nationalists have been targeted. Twitter has begun suspending accounts associated with white nationalist groups. With the hashtag No Hate in the White House has also been trending on social media. And 169 House Democrats signed a letter addressed to President-elect Donald Trump, calling for him to cut ties with Steve Bannon before he even goes into the White House. The letter says, in part, your appointment of Steve Bannon, whose ties to the white nationalist movement have been well documented, directly undermines your ability to unite the country. We strongly believe that Mr. Bannon's appointment will not allow the country to heal and come together as one. As one of your top advisors, the White House chief strategist will help set the tone for your administration. We strongly urge you to rescind this appointment immediately and build a diverse White House staff who are committed to the core American values of inclusiveness, diversity, and tolerance. One of the folks who signed that letter, North Carolina Congresswoman Alma Adams, who joins us on the phone. Congresswoman, good morning.
Good morning, Roland. How are you?
Doing great. What signal do you believe it sends to the country for President-elect Trump to actually pick Steve Bannon?
Well, it certainly sends a very negative tone to the country. It's already in turmoil as far as I'm concerned. I'm getting a lot of calls from my district, a lot of emails asking, who've asked me to support, asking that the president-elect replace him and not appoint him to come into the White House. So people are very concerned. We have a divided nation right now, and of course this Bannon is going to create a greater problem. His rhetoric has been derogatory, it's divisive, and I just don't think that's the proper tone that President-elect needs to be setting for the country. And his selection of this person certainly does that. So we're going to fight it. I'm happy to join all the members of the caucus in signing it, as well as the Congressional Black Caucus, who many of the members are on this letter as well.
And not only that, as you begin to look at some of these other choices, he is being criticized for having a virulent anti-immigration activist serving on his transition team as well. There have been some questions raised about other members as well. And so when you begin to hear these stories, you begin to see some of the folks that he is tapping, does it give you pause as to what the next 4 years will be like under a Trump presidency?
Well, it certainly does, Roland. It's very frightening, and many of the folks that I've talked to, many constituents are very concerned. They're afraid, and yeah, it does. It doesn't appear that not only will we not have a smooth transition, but I don't think this is the way to move our country forward. It's concerning everyone. I think this is why we're having the protests around the country, why we're getting so many calls, while so many different groups and individuals are calling for President-elect Trump to rescind this appointment. We're not hopeful that things are going to get better.
All right, Congresswoman Alma Adams, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Let's go back to our panel, Steve Monasteri, Barbara Arnwine, as well as Andrew Lee. Steve, look, if you're President-elect Donald Trump, you're calling for unity. Obviously, Bannon was his campaign, the CEO. This is not necessarily how you want to begin a presidency.
Well, first, I would just ask everybody to give the new team a chance. It's only been 9 days since the election. I don't know Mr. Bannon. I don't know what he's in his heart. I do know that Chairman Priebus has gotten to know him over the last few months and says he's not as been, he is in reality not as he's been portrayed through the media.
Barbara?
Well, this is not a media issue. This is this man's record. It is his statements, it's his actions. Not only is he a white supremacist, nationalist, sympathizer, supporter, he also is a wife beater. This is a man who has, you know, been documented for, you know, abusing his own wife. And I think there's a lot of issues here. Not only do we have the problem with Steve Bannon and his white nationalist affiliations, we also have Kris Kobach, who is the former Secretary of State of Kansas, who is another one of these people who is a sympathizer with white nationalists, who also is a voter suppressor, one of the leading architects of CrossCheck, which is one of the worst, you know, programs for purging voters. And he's also, you know, has other people, you know. So my whole issue here is that if you're about trying to sue the nation, when people are saying you lost the popular vote, you're not really, you know, our president, and that. So if he wants to bring those people back to him, then he needs to have an administration that really reflects justice. You can't have this white nationalist undertone, dog whistle politics going on. It's enough. We had enough of that during the campaign. You can't bring it into the White House, into the administration. Gotcha. He needs to get rid of Steve Bannon now.
Yeah, I would say that President Obama... President Obama spoke about this during his press conference, and he said that the president should be able to choose his own people. At the same time, I do think it's disturbing some of the comments that have been attributed to Mr. Bannon. And I think that this represents an opportunity for President-elect Trump to unite the country, to kind of address some of these issues, to say, all right, the campaign is over, now it's time to govern. I want to bring the country together, and here's how I'm going to do it.
All right, folks, hold tight 1 second. We come back on News One Now. We'll talk with Ambassador Andrew Young, wisdom from our elders, talking about a Trump presidency, what it will mean for Black America, and what Black America should do to respond. Also on the show, we'll hear from the families of individuals who are sitting in prison, hoping and praying that President Barack Obama grants them clemency before he leaves office. This is News One Now on TV One.
Managing your brain.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, welcome back to News One Now. As I said last night, I was on the campus of Dillon University last night, speaking as part of their Brain Food Series, packed auditorium on the campus. And we talked about, of course, the election that took place 8 days ago. Many of those students obviously concerned about an America with Donald Trump as president when they came of age under that of the first Black president of the United States, President Barack Obama. And so the question is, what do we do now? And so we created this series, Wisdom of the Elders. We reach out to civil rights veterans and others who have been through dark days in America, who have been through difficult times. And so our guest today is Ambassador Andrew Young, of course, former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, also former mayor of the city of Atlanta, lieutenant with Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as well. Ambassador Young, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, and I did my freshman year at Dillon University.
Well, of course, I'm sure you have fond memories there as well. I got to ask you this here. So many people are freaking out. So many people are concerned by what took place. Some folks despondent, others depressed as well. Your assessment of the election and the reaction from people all across this country?
Well, I tell you what, I can understand students' reactions because I think one of the most desperate things for young people is how to get through school without being burdened down by debt. And I think both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton had plans for that. I've never heard Donald Trump mention that. And I don't think he understands the role of the historically Black college, but that's something we'll have to figure out. You know, how to get to him. I did have some good news. A gentleman from Texas who is a friend of mine who is in education has had an interview with him. And he came back saying that they were very interested in some of his ideas. So I don't think we're shut out altogether. But when I became mayor, I was completely shut out by Ronald Reagan. And that turned out to be the best thing to happen for me because I knew that he didn't have any money in Washington anyway that he was going to give to cities. And so it forced me to look at the private sector. It forced me to look overseas. It forced me to look for other opportunities to create jobs. And actually, during the 8 years I was mayor, we brought 1,100 companies into Atlanta from overseas. And we insisted, and they hire Black contractors and subcontractors, and that they employ Black people. And we created 1 million jobs in those 8 years. And very little of it was, almost none of it was from Washington. The money in the world is not in anybody's state treasury. And they don't understand what's happening in the world. But there is so much money in the world. There's never been a time when there is as much understanding of human need, when there is much technology, and when there is much money. And we've just got find out where it is and put it together in meaningful projects. And
what about civil rights? Or what about civil rights organizations? What about groups along those lines? Because again, we don't know who's going to be his attorney general.
Yeah, I think that we really need to go back to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and they need to start filing some suits on these mandatory sentences and these incarceration for nonviolent offenses that just take away your citizenship rights and your difficulty and make it difficult to get a job. There's a lot of work to be done in civil rights organizations. But life right now is Dr. King had that we were to redeem the soul of America from the triple evils of racism, war, and poverty. And I think where we got was poverty. Mm. Now, what I've been working with John Bryant, because with Operation Hope,
yes,
because he put poverty in a category where we can deal with it. He says poverty is your credit score. And instead of worrying about who's racist and who's not, if you get your credit score up to about 700, well, the illustration he uses is when he bought his first car, he didn't know what credit score was, and they charged him 18.9% interest.
Mm-hmm.
And his last car, now that he's got his credit score up to about 780, he paid 1.9% interest. Well, that's the difference between being poor and middle class. It's that simple. Oh. Now, what we've done is we've gotten all the banks in the South that we've been working with, and they have a Hope volunteer in almost, every SunTrust Bank, every Regency Bank, every First Tennessee, and
right.
Synovius. And so if you go into a bank for a loan, and they say they can't give you a loan for because you got bad credit, you don't have to leave. They send you over to the Hope Desk, and the Hope Desk can help you work out. I'm not telling anything that I knew all about.
Right.
The whole time I was in the civil rights movement, I'd end up co-signing notes with brothers, and I'd end up loaning money, and my credit was all messed up. And it
Got
wasn't
it.
Until I had been the mayor and everything else before I understood how the credit system works and how it penalizes you. And so
All right.
when we finally got, 300 black men, we started visiting banks and saying, look, we want to end poverty, but we can't do it without access to banking. And they assigned a young lady to look at my finances, and she and my wife sat down, and all of the loans we had to keep kids in school and everything else, she put them all under my house note, and before I knew it, I was saving. It was $973 a month. And so he
All
had
right.
an ambassador and a mayor, a congressman, and I didn't know squat about money. And
well, I tell you what, ambassador, I tell you what, that is certainly going to be. We're going to be bringing on John about that very issue, talking about that. And so we certainly hope that folks take your advice as we move forward.
We've got to do some things for ourselves, and
right.
We've almost done better when we haven't had a friend in the White House. Now, that wasn't true of me.
Okay.
When I became mayor, they picketed me the first day I was mayor. All of my boys jumped on me. Well, they let me know, look, you're the mayor now, but we're not going to let you slide. But we've let our friends slide quite often.
All right. Ambassador Andrew Young, I am out of time. I'm out of time, but what you're saying is don't let your friends slide, don't let your enemies slide. Always push your interests and your issues. We appreciate it. Thanks
That's
a lot.
Right. We have no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, only permanent interests. And I still think
All righty.
Hillary Clinton is one of the really great women of our time, and she didn't get treated fairly.
All righty. I appreciate it, sir. Thank you very much. All right, folks, we come back. We'll hear from the families, hoping President Barack Obama grants a lot of clemencies before he leaves office. This is News One Now on TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
According to the American Civil Liberties Union, sentences imposed on black males in the federal system are almost 20% longer than those handed down to white males convicted of similar crimes. Some would argue mandatory minimums have played a huge part in this. Under the national bipartisan initiative, #Cut50, community leaders, professionals, and activists are working to reduce the number of people in prison by 50% over the next decade. And droves of #Cut50 supporters, members, and national leaders are descending on Washington, D.C. this week to plead with President Barack Obama to grant more people clemency before he leaves office. Joining me now to share more about #Cut50's efforts is Brittany Byrd, attorney and campaign director for #Cut50, Nkechi Taifa, attorney and advocacy director of criminal justice at the Open Society Foundation. Also, Ebony Underwood, daughter of William Underwood. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole 28 years ago under mandatory minimum sentencing as a drug offender. And Alex Frey and Annie Frey, parents of Trent Copeland. He is currently serving a life sentence in federal prison for a nonviolent drug offense. There's no parole offered in the federal system, so without clemency, Trent will die in prison. Folks, really want to thank you all for being here. I'll start with you. Obviously, things changed last week, the election of Donald Trump. Are you fearful, based upon the number of clemency pardons granted by President Barack Obama over the last 8 years, especially how they've increased in the past 18 months, that the door will be shut under a Donald Trump presidency?
That is indeed a possibility, but we hope that that will not be the case. Actually, if we look historically, clemencies under conservative presidents have not necessarily been less than under a Democratic president. So we are hoping that the momentum that the Obama administration has initiated will in fact continue into the Trump administration. However, we know that Obama has a little over 60 days to continue and expand and greatly accelerate the clemency initiative that he has started. And we are pleading upon him to go bold and commute as many sentences as he can while he is still in office.
But Brittany, what you have here, though, is someone who ran a campaign of law and order, who was critical of the president's clemency positions. Also, Republicans in the House and Senate have also been critical as well. That has to be a concern.
It is a concern, and I think it's imperative upon us as attorneys and activists in this space to open hearts and minds going into this next administration to show that these are not hardened criminals that are receiving clemency. These are people who are truly deserving of the mercy that they are receiving, and they've been vetted thoroughly by the Department of Justice. It's not as if President Obama is granting clemency willy-nilly to anyone who applies. These cases are thoroughly vetted.
Ebony, your thoughts on this, because obviously the president, he's been stepping up these announcements, but time is running out.
It's been an emotional roller coaster for me and my siblings. For our dad, he's been there. He's been incarcerated for over 28 years. This December will be the 29th year. We're praying that President Obama will go bold and actually advocate and bring forth our family.
What was your father convicted of?
Drug conspiracy.
Where?
In New York.
And how has that process gone? Have you made headway in the federal system?
It has been an emotional roller coaster. When I tell you, every couple of years, from the beginning of my father's incarceration, he has said that he felt like his Sixth Amendment rights were violated. He was sentenced under drug conspiracy. Everybody that testified, there was no evidence ever found. There was an FBI document that actually stated that they found no evidence 2 years before, prior to his arrest, and he was still arrested and later convicted to life without parole. 20 years plus life without parole. He completed his 20-year sentence in 2008, and he continues to live under this life without parole sentence, although all the laws that he was sentenced under have now been made unconstitutional, have now been deemed unconstitutional, and are no longer relevant. So it's really sad because now he just sits in legal limbo because of the lack of retroactivity in the law.
Let's talk about your son. Nonviolent drug offense?
Nonviolent. He got a conspiracy charge against him at the age of 27. They didn't catch him with nothing on him. It's just a word of other. He had like five or six different guys that testified against him.
Did he have a previous history? Is that one of the reasons why he was convicted?
Yes. He had.
I'm Trenton's attorney, and so he had two priors for small user quantity drugs when he was 18 years old. Mm-hmm. They both occurred in the same year, so he caught the instant charge at the age of 27, and under the three strikes, he received an automatic life sentence. So the judge, even at sentencing, said he had absolutely no discretion but to sentence Trenton Copeland to an automatic life sentence. However, if Trenton were sentenced today, those two priors would not have been charged against him because in 2013, former Attorney General Eric Holder issued a memo to all prosecutors to be very careful how they're charging those three strikes. And under the criteria that Mr. Holder set forth to the prosecutors, Trenton would not have received this enhanced sentence
at
all.
But is it the concern, though, Holder's no longer Attorney General, Loretta Lynch is, that changes again under Donald Trump presidency, they can invalidate that particular memo. They can actually go back to those type of prosecutions. How long has your son been in prison?
It's now, this year will be 6 years.
6 years. And surely, as you look at this, as you look at what is happening, Alex, with the president's decisions, are you hopeful? Are you confident that action will be taken?
This new administration, I don't think we're going forward. I think in many ways we're going to go backwards. And I feel like the more that what we see that's going on above the surface, we need to look beneath the surface and see how we can come together as a people, as a race of people, and begin to do more for our own community. Because this is what the problem is, that we're not doing enough for our own community. And we're not, because once you take the mail out of the home, the family suffer.
You've now seen more conservatives. You've seen this is not just a black thing, this is a white thing, Latino as well. And so more people are coming to grips with the fact that we have been imprisoning at significant cost folks who otherwise should not be in our prison system.
Yes, I was thinking when I just went visit my son a couple of weeks ago, and I just pray that my son will be released because some of the stuff that he was telling me that was going on in prison, and we talk about injustice. We know when you go to prison, no, we're not expecting them to make everything convenient for you, but for some, he told me one of the officers just ramshacked his room, and they do stuff like that to provoke you, to keep you from coming home, but he did not react because his goal is to come home. Mm-hmm. And I'm praying for my son to come home because he's not a bad person at all. And I'm not saying that because he's my son. I know his heart. He's a good person. I was a single parent before I met my husband, and I raised two boys by myself, and they got into that drug life because of what I couldn't afford to get him. So he decided he will get out there and try to do it that way. But if you talk to him now, you hear a total different person. He went in there as a boy, but if you listen to him now, he's more mature and he's more focused. And he always say when he get out, he said, Mom, I want to work with other young boys to make sure that they don't go down this same road that he went down.
What's the next step for hashtag Cut 50?
So we are convening with over 100 family members from across the nation who have loved ones with pending clemency petitions. We are having a press conference at the Department of Justice, just still urging President Obama to grant an unprecedented number of clemencies to give these families hope for the holidays.
All right, folks, up next, some entertainment options for you this weekend. We'll share those with you. Box office results. How did black movies do at the box office? We'll tell you. News 1 Now on TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
In its opening weekend, Almost Christmas came in fourth at the box office, folks. Again, the number is the movie starring Danny Glover, as well as Gabrielle Union, Kimberly Elise, Nicole Ari Parker, as well as Smooth. That did, again, number four at the box office. Tyler Perry's movie, Madea Boo, Madea Halloween, Steve Munisteri's favorite film, that also did well at the box office. Moonlight follows the life of a young black man in Miami as he questions his sexuality and deals with his drug-addicted mother at the height of the war as well. And that made about $5 bucks. Loving also is in movie theaters, tells the story, a true story of an interracial marriage that actually led to a Supreme Court case that actually changed the laws in this country. So that's also out in movie theaters as well. So, Steve, you're a Madea fan?
I haven't made it to the movies in a long time, Roland, but just for you.
You're about to get out the house, Steve.
I know. Well, we had an election, but just for you, I'm going to go out and see it, I promise you. So next time I'll tell you if I liked it or not.
Yeah, matter of fact, I should send Barbara Arnwine and Steve to the movies so I could see and put a camera on both of them to see the two different reactions.
Hey, we can have reality.
I'm going to the movies.
We're ready for a reality TV show.
Yeah, I was at the movies last weekend. I go.
Well, what'd you go see?
Oh, I went to see. I saw Nat Turner. Then, of course, you know, I'm one of the people who loves to follow the Avengers and all the Marvel people, so I saw Doctor Strange. So, yes,
you didn't
I'm
go see
those people.
You haven't seen Almost Christmas?
Not yet. Can't wait. I'm going to take my mom.
Lord.
Probably take my mom with me.
Andrew.
Yeah.
Andrew,
yeah,
have you seen any of these movies?
Yeah, I saw Nat Turner's movie. I'm not the biggest Madea fan, but
I ain't even mentioned Birth of a Nation. none of y'all have seen, not a single one of y'all have seen Almost Christmas, Loving, Moonlight, or Boo,
well,
or Madea Halloween.
Came out. Now, give us a break on Loving.
I do want to go see Almost Christmas. I mean, we'll see. One of my cousins told me I really need to go see the Madea movie, but I don't know. We'll see about that.
I love to see in the Madea. I probably
go
see it.
I swear, the three of y'all need to get out the house and experience life.
You got us busy too, Roland.
What movie did you see, Roland?
I've seen Almost Christmas twice. Hilarious movie.
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, it will be a staple of many households once it comes out on DVD. And look, don't be out there getting no bootleg copies of these movies, okay?
No, we don't play that.
We'll go to the movie.
Bootleg. Don't do it.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, I got to go to a break. I'll be back 60 seconds. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
All right, folks, we've got birthdays in history. Let's get right to it here. Actor David Ramsey, he turns 45 years old. R&B singer Ronnie DeVoe of New Edition, he turns 49. TV host RuPaul turns 56 years old on this day in history. In 1911, Omega Sci-Fi fraternity founded at Howard University. In 1980, Howard University launches the first TV station licensed and operated by a predominantly African-American institution when it airs Howard University TV. That was in 1980. That graphic is wrong, folks. That wasn't in 1911. And so I just want to get that right. All right, folks, tomorrow on News One Now, we will talk with the Prime Minister the ambassador to Jamaica, to the U.S., Audrey Mock. She'll be right here on the show. Also, what about elders will join us? She is the former chair of the board of the NAACP, Merle Evers Williams. Of course, her husband, Megger Evers, who was, of course, assassinated there in Mississippi, was the field secretary for the state of Mississippi there, the NAACP. So we look forward to that. Don't forget, folks, you can always hit us up on Twitter at Roland S. Martin. You can hit me up at Roland S. Martin. You can also, of course, hit at News One. Please visit our Facebook page as well. Want to get your thoughts and perspective. And if you miss portions of the show, don't forget,
We also post clips of the show on news1.com. You can also visit my Facebook page as well to check that out. We certainly hope you're able to do so. Steve, thank you so very much for joining me. Barbara, thank you so very much. Eugene as well. I want to thank everybody, Eugene. Of course. Dillon University. Thank y'all. Who are you?
Andrew.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I keep getting
all,
him the other
We all look alike, right? We all
y'all,
look alike.
Y'all all look alike.
Okay.
Yeah,
all
y'all look alike.
All you, the Republicans
that's right. Andrew,
look alike.
Eugene, y'all go together. all right, y'all. I'll see you guys. Dillon University, again, thank you so very much. New Orleans, and also, folks, I'm here broadcasting from WDSU, the NBC affiliate. I want to thank them as well for allowing us to do so. I will see y'all tomorrow. I'll be back in D.C. I got to go. Time to catch the plane. Have a great one. Holla!
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.